This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
U.S. stocks end the day mixed, but finish out a turbulent week with losses. And why FEMA wants to overhaul the nation's flood insurance program.
If you look at the history of how much money FEMA has paid out in flood insurance coverage on claims, only a handful of properties have filed multiple claims, but they've taken up a lot of money over time, about half of what FEMA's paid out in the history of the program.
We'll talk about why some of the proposals are meeting resistance from some lawmakers. Plus, the surprising way polar bears are adapting to climate change. It's Friday, June 17th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. After a week of swings, the Dow ended the day down, and the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ notched gains. But all three major indexes closed out the week with sharp losses. The S&P 500 fell into a bear market on Monday. Then, stocks rallied on Wednesday after the Federal Reserve announced its biggest interest rate hike in nearly 30 years in a bid to rein in soaring inflation. But stocks reversed course again on Thursday, closing at their lowest levels since 2020. Ultimately, the three main indexes closed the week out with losses between 4.8 and 5.8%. The Food and Drug Administration has cleared the use of COVID-19 vaccines from Moderna as well as Pfizer and its partner BioNTech for children as young as 6 months old. Clearance comes about a year and a half after the vaccines were first authorized for use in adults and expands their use to nearly 20 million children under the age of five. Our pharmaceutical reporter Jared Hopkins says that comes as a relief to many parents.
This authorization is going to provide many parents sort of the milestone and the comfortability that once their kids are vaccinated, that they can move on with their lives. A lot of parents have sort of kept their kids masked or away from other children and really sort of changed how they're raising their kids, right? And they've looked for these vaccines as a way to sort of move past that. So in that respect, you know, this is a big deal for those parents.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is expected to issue its recommendation on use of the shots soon. Most states have pre-ordered vaccines, and a national campaign to begin inoculations is expected to begin as early as next week. The UK has approved the extradition of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to the US, where he's facing espionage charges. A London court had authorized it in April, and today the British Home Secretary signed off. Assange says he will appeal. In the US, he's facing 18 counts of conspiring to disclose classified information and conspiring to hack a military computer. The charges relate to WikiLeaks' publication in 2010 and 2011 of a trove of classified material that painted a bleak picture of the American campaigns in Iraq and Afghanistan. The U.S. has been seeking Assange's extradition for years. If convicted, he could face up to 175 years in prison. And Yellowstone National Park is preparing for a tough summer after heavy rains and flooding damaged hundreds of miles of land. Our reporter Alyssa Luckpat says the park, which just marked its 150th anniversary in March, had been gearing up for a busy summer season.
So there are five spots where visitors enter the park through, and they tend to stay nearby there as well. And those spots are in small towns and communities that rely on tourism dollars to stay afloat throughout the year. And a lot of customers that were planning trips in or near the park have been calling to cancel their plans. And a lot of business owners expressed concern that they won't be able to maintain their businesses overall because they won't have any cash flow.
Officials say northern parts of the park may be closed for months, and scientists say the threat of flooding is likely to grow due to climate change. Meanwhile, Congress is considering proposals to overhaul the National Flood Insurance Program. We'll have more on what could be on the table and what it could mean for people in those flood-prone areas after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot,
Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Flooding is the country's most common natural disaster, and FEMA's National Flood Insurance Program, the main provider of flood coverage in the U.S., has struggled to keep up with massive insurance payouts. Since it was created in 1968, it's issued more than 5 million policies and paid out more money than it's collected in premiums. That's prompted calls for an overhaul. Congress is considering a series of proposals that, taken together, would amount to the most drastic change to the program in its history. But some of the proposals are causing controversy as lawmakers try to hash out a plan. Joining me now to explain is Wall Street Journal reporter Katie Stechferic. Hi, Katie. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Katie, let's start with the basics. How did this overhaul proposal come about in the first place?
The proposal sort of came out of the blue, actually. Back in May, FEMA officials wrote a letter to Congress saying, "Here are 17 things that we think you should do to fix the National Flood Insurance Program." It was 101 pages long, very detailed, and it had a total range of things. It ranged from cancel the program's debt so it can stop paying so much in interest, tie payments from policyholders to income by creating a means test so it could get cheaper for low-income folks. Another proposal was make it easier for buyers or renters to get information on how often a property had flooded previously when they move in, because sometimes that information can be hard to come by. Obviously, the range and diversity in the programs, some of these 17 proposals could get more support than others, but there were definitely some parts of the proposal that were way more controversial than others.
So let's talk more about some of the proposals that are getting the most attention.
Probably the most controversial is the one that would drop coverage for properties that have flooded frequently. If you look at the history of how much money FEMA has paid out in flood insurance coverage on claims, you can see that only a handful of properties have filed multiple claims, but they've taken up a lot of money over time, about half of what FEMA's paid out in the history of the program. So there's been a lot of concern in recent years over what should we do about frequently flooded properties. And one of the proposals would create a status for properties that have flooded more than four times and have received four claim payments of at least $10,000 each. There's only about 20,000 properties that fall into this category. And of course, homeowners could make improvements to get off of that status. There were some other very controversial aspects of the program. Another recommendation from FEMA was no more new coverage for commercial structures. Another controversial aspect would drop property owners who live in the most flood-prone areas in the country. We have really sophisticated maps now. We have a pretty good idea of where that flooding happens, and folks who live in those zones might not be able to get coverage through this program if that policy passes.
So these ideas came up at a hearing before the Senate Banking Committee this week. What can you tell us about the proponents and opponents? What did you hear from them?
The hearing was the first opportunities for lawmakers to really speak out on this issue, even though it wasn't the sole focus of the hearing. And there were definitely divergent opinions on it. Some lawmakers said that in order to make the program stop losing money at the rate that it does, we should start thinking about who should get coverage under this program. Other folks were very skeptical of that approach and felt like it was the whole purpose of the program was to make sure everyone can have access to flood insurance coverage and responsibly get it and try to protect themselves and their families from big disasters like this. So there were a range of opinions that were voiced during the hearing.
What would passing proposals like these mean for future development in flood-prone areas? Is there a sense that it would discourage building, and is that a concern?
Yeah. This issue overall pulls together some interesting stakeholders. It would obviously, if you can't get coverage in a flood-prone area, obviously there'd be less development there. And that has brought together interesting groups such as environmental groups who want to make sure that coastal areas are preserved and undisturbed, and also fiscal conservatives who have been very critical about the federal government's use of this program, kind of stating that this subsidizes coastal development in risky areas in an inappropriate way. And both of those groups have been pushing for reform from this program for a long time to discourage coastal development.
Katie, how is this overhaul being viewed in light of the fact that scientists predict floods are likely to occur even more frequently than they do now, in large part due to climate change?
Gosh, it's one of the reasons why this is on the docket and why everyone's discussing it. I mean, during the hearing, there were lawmakers from Montana that spoke about the Yellowstone flooding. This program has been under the radar for a long period of time. And just in the last few years, lawmakers have paid more attention to it as constituents experience flooding, extreme weather, all that sort of thing. And they've heard from constituents who haven't been able to get great coverage and who've been disappointed in the program. And that's really driven the calls for reform.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Katie Stetch-Ferrick. Katie, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, another effect of the warming climate has been the retreat of Arctic sea ice. As it's melted, polar bears have struggled with the loss of their favored hunting grounds. But a new study published this week in the journal Science offers a bit of optimistic news. Scientists were surprised to discover a group of a few hundred polar bears in a remote area of southeast Greenland that are adapting to life without sea ice. They've been seen hunting in an unusual habitat for polar bears, a unique slushy freshwater environment where glaciers meet the ocean on the coast of Greenland. Our science reporter, Eric Kneeler, says the discovery is making scientists think the bears could be more resilient than they thought.
If they can find some small groups of polar bears that are adapting to a different kind of habitat and a different place to hunt, that may give them more hope for the future that the species as a whole will be able to survive the 21st century when scientists believe that much of the summer sea ice will have disappeared.
And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Luke Vargas. The show was produced by Trine Nuri and Mohsen Ali, with help from Ariana Aspuru, Anthony Bansi, Julie Chang, Daniela Cheslow, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Jenny Ang, Kateri Yoakum, Michael Kosmides, and Chris Sinsley. We'll be off this Monday in observance of Juneteenth, but we'll be back with a new episode on Tuesday morning. Thanks for listening.